Welcome to Voices and Views. I'm your host, Thomas Risberg, and today on the show, we are privileged to have Dr. Susan Wolf, the CEO and Dean of Great Falls College, Montana State University. And without further ado, Susan, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, it's my privilege for sure. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So I want to delve right in. You've had such an incredible career. But it all starts at the home and in childhood. And I saw your family homesteaded out here in Montana in 1876, correct?
Correct.
Now, what lessons did you think you learned and what was childhood like, growing up here in Montana?
You know, being raised on a cattle ranch gives the opportunity to really learn about all aspects of life. We learn how to be self-sufficient. We learn about what's important at this particular moment, this particular season. People often laugh, or my family members will say, why are you always paying attention to the weather? Why do you always say, what's the weather doing there? Because we lived by the weather. That was, you know, one of the factors. I felt so privileged to have grown up with my mom and my dad right there. Unfortunately, our great-grandfather, who had homesteaded the ranch in 1876, had passed before I was born, and my dad's mother had passed just right before I was born, and then grandpa died when I was only two, so I didn't have those older generations with me as I was growing up, but we had one of my grandmother's brothers who worked on the ranch with us. So Uncle Bill was, what a wonderful mentor to be around. Such a kick, you know, all his stories and his life, things that he had done. But it was nice to be surrounded by family and to be learning and growing up with my siblings. The three of us have remained so close throughout life, and we just lost our mom a year ago, January, and we were able to come together, stay together, come together, celebrate her, and we're continuing to celebrate our dad, who passed away in 1998. We discovered as we were going through things in the house that Mom had kept all the letters that Daddy had written her during World War II. And, you know, the three of us kids say, gee, we wish we could go back now and ask both Mom and Daddy questions about their lives. And I would give anything to be able to talk with my great-grandmother on the other side of Daddy's family, who came out from Wisconsin. The family took the train to Bismarck, then they brought the steamboat up to Fort Benton, and then by wagon they went down and settled in the Little Elk and Big Elk region of the Musselshell. So we learned the love of Montana. We learned the history of Montana. We learned that through hard work and collaboration, you continue to build Montana. And we, all three of us kids, learned the importance of giving back and helping to build community. So I would say, those were some of the things. We also were taught the importance of learning, of doing well in school, the expectations that we would all go to college, and the expectation that, because we had newspapers and we had magazines and we had books all throughout the house, that we would be paying attention to current events and be able to discuss those and ask questions. So we, I guess in many ways, we learned about politics, how you, our elected officials, really guide things, how laws are made. And that to be a part of that is a privilege, and it's also a responsibility. So I think that's That and curiosity. I mean, okay, when do we see the first bitterroot? When do we see the first bluebird? When do we hear the first meadowlark? Oh, I think this is March, so the pussy willows are out. You know, that's just when you're around living and breathing things all the time. The environment is just critical to life.
Absolutely. So that's a perfect segue. I mean, those are some really good lessons for all of us. I especially love, I'm a city boy, and I would get so disconnected from the rhythms of life. And it really is, in many ways, the way we live is not, you know, how we were meant to, right? In an evolutionary sense. And so I've always loved about Montana, and I love that, you know, you've kept this front and center, I know, in work you've done on the environment and protecting it, but that being rooted in the land. And I want to move on. So you take these lessons and creativity and the love of learning, and you start out and you go to Montana State University, and then we'll go on to get a master's. What during that period did you know that I want to get involved as an educator?
It started out with a deep background in the fact that my great-grandmother on my dad's side was one of the first school teachers in the state of Montana. That was my great-grandmother, then my grandmother, daddy's mom, also graduated actually from one of the earliest colleges in the state of Montana. It was the College of Montana, located in Deer Lodge. She graduated there and became a school teacher. So, you know, we had that background, and I loved going to school. I remember I started first grade when I was 5 years old and was so excited. I'd seen my sister and my brother go off to school, and I was just anxious to go. And that first Saturday, I popped out of bed and raced downstairs in my dress and asked my dad for help, you know, with my tights or whatever. And he said, "Well, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to go to school." And he said, "Well, Susan, there isn't school on Saturday and Sunday." And I was so disappointed. That's just how much I was eager to learn, and I enjoyed it. So in my life, as I was moving along, I had amazing teachers that I thought, wow, I like the way they work with students. They recognize each student's abilities, their interests. So I went to school in a 3-room grade school, so grades 1 through 8. We didn't have kindergarten in those days, and so it was a 3-room schoolhouse. And so you're sitting in, let's say I'm in the 6th grade, and our teacher has a lesson with us, and she's done, and she's moved on to the 7th grade, and then she moves on to the 8th. So you get to hear all those things even while you're still in the 6th grade. And so I was fascinated by how the teachers really got to know their students and help them move forward. So being able to go to MSU and earn my bachelor's at a place where my dad had gone and earned his degree in engineering, and on my mother's side, you know, her brother was a Rhodes Scholar, her first cousin. They now have the Capriva Scholarship and Science Day based on that. I mean, it was just part of life. And I wanted to be able to help others have opportunities through education. So after earning my bachelor's, moved out to Oregon for my former husband to continue his education at Oregon State University. And I was very, very fortunate to be able to be hired by Lynn Benton Community College, first as a part-time teacher. And after a year, then they said, you know, "We really like how well-organized you are and how you do things or whatever. We'd like you to become a part-time administrator too." And that really began that I'm still a teacher, I'm still a learner, but now I'm organizing ways for others to be able to have that same type of experience. So I went on to get my master's at Oregon State University. And the lesson that was given to me that got me to that point was I had been in a position and an acting basis as a director of one of our off-campus centers for a year. And then when they opened the position up and I applied, I didn't get the job. And that was crushing. There was just no way to say it. I was just crushed. But they hired a person who had applied for graduate school. So the light goes off and said, oh, if I want to continue to grow in this career, I need to go get my master's degree. So I did in adult education, the learning theories of how you teach adults, because that's who I had been teaching. And absolutely loved that. So I'm working full time. You know, we're raising our family and I'm going to school, which is no different than students. And learning that not everybody goes right to college when they're 18 and they go all the way through to their career and continue to do that because life can intervene. And that's been a big part of how I view administering, leading, teaching in higher education. So it was a real privilege for me. I was also working at OSU. So I left Lynn Benton Community College where I'd been, from what, 1976 to 1984. I went to Oregon State University and I worked in the continuing education department for 2 years, halfway through my master's. And then Lynn Benton Community College contacted me and said that they had an opening in as the director of the training and economic development department, and they would like to have me apply. So then I went back to Lynn Benton and back to a two-year environment. So that's what was happening during that time.
When I look at your career, you do, I love, we talked about this via email, is being adaptive. And what I want to get to now is when you're in and working on instruction, what do you view as the foundational purpose of what you as a leader at a two-year institution, what is your purpose for your students?
Oh, we have every student who comes into the door or potential student, they will identify their purpose and their path and their plan. So we have found with two-year education that we will often have people come, maybe it's during an economic downturn and maybe they lost their job or they see this as a time to reskill and start a new career. But if they don't have an identified purpose, then they may be taking classes that they don't need to finish their degree or their certificate. It just may take them longer, so they're losing some time. They're spending more money than what they may need to spend. We feel our purpose here at this institution and really at all the two-year institutions is, let's help every person say, why are you here? And what's your goal? Okay, now here's your plan. These are the courses you need to take. Each one of our blocks, because we're in an 8-week block delivery mode here at Great Falls College, MSU. So these are the classes you need to take to stay on track. Our advisors check in with those students throughout that block to say, how are you doing? If a faculty member sees that somebody's struggling, they talk with the student. They also let the advisor know that's part of that path. But we want to get them from, I have this idea, out the door in a successful way so they can go out and support themselves and their family, be good citizens, and contribute to our economy and our society. So that's, I love the fact that we do that, a purpose, plan, and a path.
Absolutely. No, that's so deliberate. And you know, we, so many of us in every field get into this day-to-day transactional, and it's really, that's powerful to step back and see, here's what we, you know, at Great Falls College, MSU, or any other two-year institution, you know, we're going to help you mold your purpose, have a path for you to get there, and then plan to go down that. So I want to take a turn a little bit into something that I know you've been passionate about throughout your career, but is the actual learning environment. And we've heard a lot of, you know, there's schools without walls, and it has really changed in my lifetime. And I'm sure as you've gone through your career, you've seen this. What did you do on designing the actual learning environment?
My doctoral program and the research I did was designing the learning environment to support collaborative project-based learning. So that will tell you right there that I feel pretty strongly that most everyone learns best by doing, by connecting what they're learning to what's happening in the world and what may happen in their career, and go out and practice, and then come back into the information, to the research, the literature, and say, okay, that's why that happens. But I wonder what would happen if we did this. And my whole change, it was a change for me and my topic for research when I visited a school in Minnesota. I was actually, you know, in the program, and I was working at Oregon State University for the second time, and had been invited to, you know, go to visit this school. And we pull up in this big bus. I mean, I'm with national policymakers. I'm with educators, you know, all kinds of different people, scientists. We pull up to this school. It's the Minnesota School of Environmental Studies, which really doesn't teach people to be environmentalists, but they use the environment for students to learn how to learn as they're going through high school. So it's that connection, it's that project-based. And we pull up, and students are out working in these ponds. They've got hip waders on, they're out in these ponds, they're doing things. And everybody gets off the bus, and they start walking into the school, and I go over to the ponds to start asking the students what they're doing. I was curious, I wanted to learn with them, and I was wishing I had my hip waders with me. And then I was told I had to go in the building. And I thought, oh, I don't want to go in the building. But I walk in, and here's this learning living wall. I'm not kidding you. It is the size of a wall in a, you know, a large office area. And it has aquariums, it has plants, it has all these science things going on. So right away when you walk in, it's like, well, this is not like any school I walked into. And then the other thing I noticed was it had been open for 3 years in Minnesota, where it snows, it rains. And I didn't see any stains on the carpet. I didn't see any marks on the walls. And again, this is high school level. And I asked the students, I said, you've got to tell me what's going on here, because this is what I'm seeing. And I think they were a little bit shocked. And they said, well, this is where we live. When we're here, this is our living environment. And so we want to take care of it. So if we spill something on the carpet, we clean it up. We don't wait for a custodian to come do that, because this is our environment. I was so excited with what I saw and how they were structured into what they called houses of 100, where those same 100 students learned all their classes together, except for if somebody did music, or if they were at a different math level, something like that. But they had become this family of 100 with these same teachers. They were doing projects with the Environmental Protection Agency. They were going and doing work in South America. They were doing things that I had never seen done in a school before. And so I started thinking about, so how does the environment impact how people learn? And it was at that moment that I changed my research for my doctorate and started working with architects and educators really around the world. Because I felt that, that what we had all grown up with, the industrial era schoolhouses where everyone sat in straight rows in chairs and you looked ahead and you never spoke. And I remember seeing a cartoon of these widgets going down an assembly line, and those widgets were students, and the tops of their heads were open, and the teacher was pouring knowledge in as they went by. And, you know, that might have worked when it was the factory era where everybody did kind of do the same thing. You stayed in one place and you did one thing, and then the workday was over and you went home. But that wasn't what our world was like today. So I can't tell you what that experience was like. I was able to present and learn more than anything. I learned from, I'm trying to think what the name of it was right now. It was creative learning environments. We were in Amsterdam, and we traveled throughout the Netherlands looking at different schools and how learning was taking place and how facilities were designed. So that was a wonderful experience to meet architects and educators from all around the world. And I talked with them about what my research was, and they kept me on track. They kept getting in touch saying, okay, are you done yet? We need your work. We need those results. And I learned so much from them. And one of the things that sticks with me is we're all learners and we're all teachers. At the 2-year college level, the average age of our students is the late 20s. I mean, it goes all the way from 16-year-olds who are doing dual credit all the way up to people who are in their 60s and 70s. So they're all bringing different life experiences to the classroom, to our facilities, and they have so much to teach us. And that's what I think we all need to recognize, that we're all experts in many things, but the real learning happens in that collaborative way when we share, then when we're learning together, when we're risking together, when we're failing together. I think that is so important.
Incredible. What I want to then is to kind of give our listeners some examples of this, where you were able to apply it. Can you tell me a little bit about this Can Be Applied Tech Center that in Oregon that you organized and got started?
That was a wonderful project working with that school district. So that was a district. You had talked earlier about how we have to be able to transition. That was a district who had originally been started when there was still a lot of timber jobs in that part of Oregon. This is in Canby, Oregon. So a lot of timber, a lot of agriculture. But as Portland grew and started pushing out into those other communities, it became a place where plant nurseries were now the primary business, primary workforce. And so the superintendent actually at that school district recognized that he had the opportunity to help his teachers and the students to pivot to what today was, not what yesterday was. So we worked really hard. I was working with an architecture firm in Portland that was amazing to work with. And we sat down with those administrators, with the faculty, and with the students. So that again shows that collaboration all through the organization. And we talked about, you know, what is needed. And in that venue, the original building had been a separate building, very few windows. It was dark. And it was more of back in the day when we had the, you know, the shop programs where there was automotive, we had carpentry. And I'm just trying to think if there was another one of the, and probably welding. So it was a pretty dark space. And we knew that if we were going to be connecting students with the environment and with these plant nurseries, that being able to look out windows and seeing the environment was going to be key to that pivot. So we not only designed the building to have a lot of exterior windows, but we also designed the facility to have interior ceiling to floor glass. So I might be in my biology class and I am talking with a potential client at one of these nurseries, and they're talking about, well, how do I contact our customers so they can automatically look over to where the media communications program is, and they could begin to make those connections. So the teachers and the students and the business community really demonstrated that collaboration. And I would take architects, other educators through that facility, and we would go into those classrooms, and the students never even knew we were there because they were so busy working on their projects, and they were working together and often in a huddle. They never even knew we were there. And so they didn't have the discipline problems because students were guiding their own learning. It was so exciting to see that. And then they had the opportunity with Namibia, Africa had a native plant that was dying, and they had come to the United States to get help, at the university level to say, how can we save this plant? They had some of the plant tissue with them. And I don't know why, I don't know what all the circumstances were, but none of the universities wanted to take on that project. And they had heard about the fact that this high school, small high school in Canby, Oregon, had a state-of-the-art biotissue culture lab that had been developed by those plant nurseries who had purchased the equipment, installed the equipment, worked with the students in how to use this. And the students and the teachers were able to take that tissue culture and regenerate those plants successfully. And then they were able to go back to Africa to help replant those plants. So the environment inspired those students to be able to do that. And I remember when that, you know, we designed the building and I went out there and the steel was rising up out of the ground. Then there was that moment of, oh my gosh, what if this doesn't work? So you go through all that, and then the building is built, gets furnished, students start, and they loved it. The teachers loved it. The students loved it. The community loved it. So it was an amazing project.
Unreal, Susan. And here's the question that this begs for me. I think this is high school students, and they are doing this kind of groundbreaking work, collaborating with people in Africa. And yet, when we look at some of the broad headline numbers in the U.S. education system in terms of on international studies about proficiency in science, in math, in reading, we're not moving the dial and then down. Further, we're not seeing those big rises in productivity in our labor force. What do you think are the barriers? Why can it happen in Canby and we're not seeing it at scale where it's fundamentally shifting the trajectories for our students?
I would say that it could be that there's been such a separation between learning environments, our schools, and the business community. Somehow we have, and maybe in some ways we have stayed, in that place where everything was still siloed, where you had home, you had school, and you have work. And it's when those employers and can be, they needed employees. They needed to have people understand that workplace. They needed to have employees who knew how to work with people, which is what you learn through project-based learning, through collaboration. So everybody had to come together to make that happen. And I don't know why that separation still exists. I think it comes from a sense of protection of what people have today, trying to keep funding for our schools, trying to keep our businesses, you know, their bottom line at a level where they can continue to employ people. And I think that it's when the businesses reach out and bring these kids in, these students in, these learners in, these teachers in, and they all work together to create this. I think our community of Great Falls is almost there. I think that I serve on the GFDA board. I serve on the chamber board. I'm involved with the schools, United Way. We're all hungry for that to happen. I think we're there. It's going to take a couple of those really interested business owners to say, let's do this. And we had an example here at Great Falls College last spring when we, when COVID hit and we had to pivot so quickly. And when we were able to start to bring students back to campus in May, I had welding students who still needed to get hours. You know, you learn to weld by doing, and they needed more hours so that they could try to graduate on time or pretty close to on time. And I reached out to ADF International and I said, I've got some students here who need welding hours. Is there anything you can do to help us? Oh my goodness. They took in five of those students. For 3 weeks, they paid them. And that was a beginning of a relationship now that we've been able to grow. I mean, we had a good relationship with ADF ever since we helped them come to this community, but they saw the benefit as well. So we've created that relationship that's ongoing. People are reaching out more for internships. The state of Montana has reached into our cybersecurity program in their cybersecurity department for the state of Montana. We just had two students go to Helena and spend time with them, finish up, and we now have another student down there for the second 8-week block. So I think people are beginning to realize that we can't be in silos. We have to work together. And, that passion that I have, even though I'm going to be retiring the end of June from this job, that passion isn't going to go away. And I don't know, exactly what that means. I just out of the blue last month, I had two architects, that I had worked with a long time ago, reach out to me. So maybe I'll have an opportunity to go out and get involved a little bit more in helping with the design of the facilities. But it takes a different mindset. So teachers and faculty have to teach differently. One of the colleges I worked with in the state of Texas, their CEO, they were having trouble. The custodians were having trouble with one of the classrooms and the fact that they would have the chairs and the tables all set up in a row. And then at the end of the day, they would go in and everything would be pushed to the sides and they'd have to go back in and reset. Well, the classrooms were set up in that old traditional way. The students wanted to learn collaboratively and working on projects, and the furniture got in the way. So they pushed it aside. The teachers, were down on the floor with them and they were doing their work. So the teachers have to learn to teach differently. Which I'm so lucky here at Great Falls College, our faculty are always wanting to innovate. But all through the organization, you have to learn to do things differently. We have created small spaces for informal learning on this campus where people can gather. When we can all be together, when we're not in a COVID time, faculty and students are all together. They might leave the classroom, but then they continue that teaching and learning as a group, and they'll go find a place where they can sit down. And so we have purposely created those spaces here. So you can tell I'm excited about it.
Yeah, Susan, so what I want to now give a chance to is to let our community and our listeners know, what are the programs that Great Falls College MSU is offering? What are the relationships? You know, we talked about ADF and the relationship you have with them, with employers and community groups. And where do you see Great Falls College being a driver of the future of this community and of our economy?
Thank you for that question too, because I am concerned that there is right now, I think there's a mindset where people maybe don't value higher education, where they want people to learn a skill and go to work. And we all need to have skills and go to work. But we also need to learn how to continue to learn. We need to know how to be curious. So let's say if I'm working somewhere in a parts department, I have to be curious a little bit more about that, the vehicles or the farm implements or whatever it is that we're selling parts for, so that if somebody comes in and says, I need this, I may know enough to ask a couple more questions to find out that, oh gosh, maybe they do need that, but they might also need these other things. And we're working with Dick Anderson Construction. I think this is our fourth year, maybe starting the fifth, where Dick Anderson and Helena wanted to upskill his employees. He said, but I don't want them to go to college. I don't want them to be in internships. I want them to do this on the job so that they're not losing hours and they're not losing pay. And I don't want them to have to spend a lot of time outside of work to learn these things. So he was willing to pay his employees, the ones that they chose to be in the program, to pay them on the job to be learning new skills so that they could become supervisors. And he's really looking for people who can become maybe the owners of his company in the future. So the businesses have to know that we are very willing partners to provide for what they need when they need it, and to know that we and our faculty can pivot quickly. I had read in the newspaper where the city was short on paramedics. And so they were sending people kind of one by one to the East Coast to go through a training program. And I thought, gosh, we have that program. Why is that happening? So I reached out to the city, and they'd gone to our catalog, and they had seen where we have a paramedic program, but it was 2 years long. And they couldn't wait for 2 years. And I said, well, but we also do customized training. And we worked with them, with the fire department, you know, the chief and his folks. And we created a 7-month program where those paramedics were here from 8 to 5 every day, you know, 5 days. And in 7 months, they had completed that 2-year program. And then they had their ride-alongs and the things that they had to do during the summer. So I'm going to say in 8.5 months, we now had our 8 paramedics that the city was short, and the money stayed here locally. So what I want to say to everyone in our community and our listening area, we can build for you what you need. Please come to Great Falls College MSU and help us help you be successful in your business. It can be in the healthcare field. It can be in cybersecurity. It can be in accounting. It can be in engineering, because we have a 1+3 engineering program. We have a variety of programs. It can be in welding fabrication. It can be in our industrial technician program. We have all of those things, besides preparing people with their general education courses to go on and earn a bachelor's. So we're here to build a community where the epitome of change, we're open to change, and we're here for every single one of you. You're our taxpayer. We are here because of you, and we want to be here to help you build this community.
Yep, that's, boy, I love it, Dr. Wolf. I do, you know, encourage, will you let employers know, so if they're interested in reaching out to you and the college, do they go look on the website, or how do they get in contact with you or the relevant people at the college?
I would have them reach out to me at 406-771-4310. And if I'm not at my phone, leave me a message. You can send an email at susan.wolff, that's W-O-L-F-F, at gfcmsu.edu. And I will get them connected with the right program director, with the right division director, and make these things happen. And, you know, I just want to go back and talk about the healthcare field just for a moment. This college has the largest number of healthcare programs of any in the state. We're the only dental hygiene program. And we have worked with our partners at Gallatin College and City College, so that's in Bozeman and Billings, to create a 1MSU network. We're offering surgical technician. We'll be offering respiratory therapy in both of those communities besides here, using technology and using local clinical sites. So that, again, just shows you how creative we can be and how we're willing to use whatever it takes to help people gain the knowledge they need to have the career that they want.
I have to tell a short anecdotal story. I went to the dentist on Monday, and the dental hygienist there was a graduate. And in terms of attracting bright young folks, the gal's from Idaho originally.
Yep.
And the sole reason she came to Great Falls was due to the dental hygiene program. And she is the epitome of what we need as a community of these young, ambitious, bright, community-minded folks. And I love when you see the humanization, the personification of all these programs and great things that you're doing in day-to-day life in the community. And that does lead me to a broader question, taking it out from Great Falls College, MSU. In our general higher education system, how have you seen beliefs about two-year colleges and a willingness to invest in them change? Do you feel that they're more appreciated? Are we receiving better funding? Or do you think that the bachelor and that four-year has still kind of maintained, at least in the public mind, a feeling that that's the gold standard? That's what everyone needs to have to be successful.
You know, I think it's a little of both. There are still so many people in society who believe that that bachelor's degree is the gold standard. And from there, you know, all the statistics will show that people with either a two-year degree or a bachelor's degree, that when, you know, the economy takes a dive for whatever reason, they're better able to hang on to their jobs or to even go to new jobs. But I think there's also recognition that not everyone can go to those four-year institutions right away, or maybe never, but they still have that ability to reach out and learn new information and to gain credentials and certificates and, you know, the two-year degrees. It is, it's alarming to me right now that some people are feeling that higher education is not needed, that people just need to be taught all their skills at the high school level and then just go out and go to work. That, to me, that feels like maybe we're going several generations backwards. because we all know that in every business, they've had to change, they've had to adapt in order to stay in business, because nothing is staying the same. And we need to have employees who have those personal capabilities to be able to adapt and to accept change and be okay with that and to seek that, because that's what keeps our businesses and our communities vibrant. But I think it takes both. I mean, I'm a good example. I started college. I went to Carroll College for 2 years, and then I was out for 3 years. And then I went back to MSU and got my bachelor's. And then 10 years later, I got my master's at Oregon State. And then 10 years after that, I got my doctorate. And that continual learning process, it's a building block. You know, it's stepping stones along the way. And we need to have both. I want to make sure that when that plumber comes to my house, that my plumbing's going to work. I want that master plumber. I want the master electrician. I think that when people can learn on the job, you know, in our trades areas, we need those people. I want that automotive technician. It's really good if they can be certified, which, you know, you can get. If you go to Paris Gibson High School, those students leave there with an ASE certification, and we all want that. So, Tom, I want to say it takes all of us, because we're all different and our needs are different. And it's harder, I think, for people when they're older to go back to a four-year institution. Whereas here at this college, we welcome people of all ages because we want your knowledge and your expertise. So I just think it takes all of us.
Absolutely. And I do want to get at this idea of lifelong learning. And we've talked about the industrial age model of education. Are you seeing a shift in employers where they'll accept, you know, they want to see skills. They want to see that you have this certification, not the bachelor's degree. I hear a lot of folks that talk about credential inflation, that what we've seen is that jobs that used to require a college degree, or excuse me, a high school degree, now require a college degree, but the actual work being done hasn't changed significantly. Do you make an argument, and are employers listening, that in many cases, the folks that have a certification or some credential from you are better able to do the job, even if they don't have that quote, gold standard bachelor's degree?
Absolutely. And I think that you can go in with a skill, but if you don't have the ability to communicate with people, if you don't have the ability to problem solve, if you don't have the ability to learn with others, if you don't learn that, you know, your boss is going to say, I need you to do this right now. Well, you better go do that right now. And I think some people are maybe not getting some of those life skills that we used to get at home. So then those are being taught at the schools. They've got to be taught somewhere. And if it's not happening in those earlier years, then our public schools, our private schools are needing to pick that up to reinforce that. And then when you go on to earn a one-year certificate or even, you know, come in and take classes for a couple of blocks for a semester and then have to step out and go to work and come back in. That's really the way of life, is you have to be able to step out and then come back in. And you might be with an employer who all of a sudden they've got a new set of, let's say, farm equipment coming in. You know, if you're working on the latest farm implements, you really need to have a computer background. So the employers need to recognize that their employees will need to continue to learn, and that, you know, they can do that by working with the two-year institution. And maybe we can create something. We work with Pasta Montana. We work with General Mills, you know, where we're able to teach people while they're on the job, or they might come here. We've had our military people come down here from the Air Guard, and they've come down and taken classes in different things. We work with Malmstrom and Red Horse on the improvement of welding skills. So I guess what I'm trying to say, Thomas, is there is not a one size fits all. nobody can expect any one institution to give them the perfect employee. People come to us, they come to work, they come to life with different life circumstances that we all need to be aware of and help them work to the best of their abilities. So it takes a village, it takes a community to make these things happen. And I can't defend that the two-year college is better than a four-year college. I can't defend that high school with no college is better. It depends on each individual. And I think we all have to be supportive of all of those opportunities to get into the workplace for people to support themselves and to support our communities.
Absolutely. And I do want to hone in on that soft skills element. There's all kinds of research now that you'll have folks that have really good hard skills, right? They understand the technical aspects of their job, but they're unable to communicate in a meaningful way. They are lacking in the ability essentially to have positive interactions. And that really hinders folks. When you look at who is successful, they have that emotional intelligence. And I just wanted to clarify, what are the ways that you're deliberately fostering that in students?
Oh, I just, you know, it's through our faculty. I was just out in the hallway a little bit earlier this morning talking with one of our faculty and how they involve those students in, you know, they might give them a question and say, this particular faculty member teaches history. And so they might be studying, one of the certain eras in history. It might be U.S. history. It might be Native American. It might be Western civilization and all those things. And what that particular faculty member does, and many of ours do, is say, you know, this is what we've been taught. How do you see that working today? Or if you happen to run for the legislature and this particular bill is brought up, you know, how are you going to deal with your fellow legislators? How are you going to work across the aisle, to come to a solution that's going to benefit the greatest number of people? And all of our faculty do that because they bring in the real world into the classroom. Our accounting department is amazing at what they do, and they have several internships too. And, Carrie Dolan is a CPA, and so she can bring that real life experience in. So people can attach the theory or what they're learning to what's happening in the real world. And if you have students working in a group where, okay, I'm part of a team, I guess I'm going to have to be able to speak. I'm going to have to be able to produce a product that everybody reviews. And maybe not everybody agrees with what I'm saying. How am I going to handle that? And so they get that opportunity to practice all those emotions and find out how they can improve. And we really focus on that here.
So I think a couple takeaways, and then I want to give a chance to, we're about out of time, but see if you have any burning desires. But I love collaboration with the community, with the businesses, and that innovation, constantly looking for what's the next opportunity. And I know the school is open to working with employers to meet their needs. And then also not a one size fits all, that you've got something that fits people in their life on their time frame. I am so grateful that you came on today, Susan. I have learned a ton about everything going on at Great Falls College, MSU. It's simply incredible. I salute you. And do you have anything that you would like to leave our listeners with, a burning desire?
Well, there are just a couple things I want to say. Because we pay attention to our students and where they are, we broke the 16-week semester into 2 8-week blocks because life happens. Again, the vast majority of our students are working adults with families and with jobs. And if we had a 16-week semester, they were having to step out, and they were leaving with student debt, but they had no credits. And that's just, you know, for all of us, we just can't stomach that thought. So we're doing the 8-week block. We are probably the only institution in the state of Montana where our enrollment is higher at the end of the semester than it was at the beginning. Because being able to register in start classes in March or in October, that might fit those seasonal workers, or something else has happened where now they can start at a time that's convenient to them rather than when it's convenient to the institution. So I want our community to know that that's just another way that we ourselves continue to change and to pivot. But here are some things I want everybody to remember. We all hear the word fail, and that's a bad word. You know, nobody wants to fail. But you know what fail really means? Fail means first attempt in learning. First time we ever got on a bicycle, I can almost guarantee every one of us fell off. We didn't fail, we were learning. So fail really means first attempt in learning. The word end, E-N-D, doesn't mean it's over. It means that effort never dies. Do not stop trying to learn what you want to learn. And if somebody tells you no, no, N-O means next opportunity. So if a person changes their mindset to always look for success, to always look for the positive, their life will be better.
Wonderful words of wisdom to leave our listeners with. Again, Dr. Wolf, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. And thank you for inviting me.